Thank you. Good afternoon. Last year I had gave a presentation on race 4 and recommended to the industry that we test as many upland varieties in germplasm as humanly possible at a high spore count field in Texas, basically to assess the potential of the disease, and it's our belief that it's spreading. It's certainly spread from India to California to Texas, so it's heading due east. So we also encourage anybody that has not worked on any germplasm and screen race for to do so. And we certainly don't want to see what happened in California happen in the rest of the United States, which was devastating. We were extremely pleased that the industry responded to our request. We evaluated over 5,000 upland varieties this last season. We had five private companies participate with a lot of commercial lines and lines that are going to be commercialized shortly. And I believe it was all state breeders and all federal breeders. If I missed anybody, I'm sorry. But they were of great assistance. Well, our emphasis was that this is a disease I've dealt with for 20 years. We've found a high degree of resistance in Pima cottons. We saw it in upland. We recognized that uplands had not really had any disease resistance that we saw at the time. And so we wanted to bring forth to the industry and be as transparent as possible to educate everybody about this disease, as well as screen as much as humanly possible. So what we did is, let me see if, we had 13 site visits, and we basically provided all those that participated in it to put their entries in. When they did arrive at the field, we gave them their field plans. We took them out there and showed them their material, showed them how we tested it, under what protocols we tested it under. So they basically get a better understanding. But we had breeders, we had ginners, we had growers, extension agents, consultants, seed execs, pathologists, researchers. Basically, it was just to educate the industry about this. Because really it was isolated to California for the most part. So I do believe there is a much greater understanding and awareness of race 4 than certainly last year, and it helps us focus greatly on how we can solve this problem. Our overarching goal is to basically find resistance or even immunity, dare I say, to Fusarium race 4, and then head off to private industry to where they can produce their varieties with whatever yield qualities, genes, so the grower has it available to him before it hits their region. To date, in my opinion, at least what we have tested, and we've tested a great deal, we have not seen a high degree of resistance in any of the uplands. We've seen low-level resistance, and that's about it. And we did conduct a yield trial for a private company, and basically two uplands out-yielded our Pima DP348. By a few pounds, not very much. But in that area, your typical Pima goes for 200 or 2 bales per acre, whereas your typical upland would go 2.5 to 3. So we felt there was at least, in the better materials, there's at least a 30% yield reduction in uplands, in the better upland material. And some of them had a 70-80% yield loss. So it depends on degree of resistance that we've seen in these uplands. The one thing that we attempted to do, just to kind of give us a ballpark figure on where we're at, is we did a survey amongst a lot of the breeders and basically asked them, okay, if we had found resistance or immunity in this material, how long would it take to commercialize it? So we started with the pre-commercial, and there, that's the most ideal. Because within 2 years, you can increase the seed and you've got it available to the grower. Then you go to the conventional upland. Well, if you find resistance in uplands, that's fine. But it'll take you 6 to 8 years to put the gene in, do the testing, do the seed increasing, the evaluation. So it's a typical variety development program. If you found a conventional Pima, then you're talking about something we know a lot about, is it may take 12 to 15 years. And then if you found a diploid, it might take 20 plus years. So it depends on where you start, where you find the resistance, and how long does it take to get to the farmer's field so he can actually utilize that variety. Does this look familiar? In 2016, Mike and myself were at a field day that we conduct in the El Paso area every year, and we were talking to the growers, and the growers were, you know, wondering why our varieties were so much more vigorous on our Pima varieties and the fuller season types. And we explained to them that we needed to put Fusarium race 4 resistance into the Pima varieties. Well, those that have more vigorous growth seem to do better. And they really didn't understand why they needed it. Well, as I explained the disease to them, that in Pima fields, you see year one, you'll see a circular pattern of death in the seedling stage, and then it will grow out exponentially with each successive year. So once we mentioned that to them, they all started contributing, saying, yeah, we've got a spot in our field, and we see one over there. So we went to check it out, and we basically found about 200 fields that were affected by race 4 in 2016. That afternoon, we realized the problem immediately because we saw what happened in California. So we immediately called Dr. Don Jones and informed him of it, and then, of course, he spread the word. So in 2017, we set up this test to basically demonstrate to the industry what the problem was. And 357 is a susceptible variety that we had grown. It's a conventional variety. And the 348 is a new resistant Pima type that we have. And so we basically showed this to everybody. And with Dr. Nichols' help, we were able to do a lot of testing to verify it. So that's why you see the discovery date in 2017. But when we talked to the growers in 2016, we basically asked them, how long have you seen these circles? And most of them said 3 to 4 years. And especially at certain locations. I mean, it was only a few locations that had it 4 years prior to that. So it's a disease that can be hidden very easily. And unless the growers are educated about where it is, how it acts, how it behaves. Now in Pima, I can tell you that it's a lot easier to spot. And the reason is you have that circular pattern of seedling death. So it's pretty easy for a grower to pick that out. In uplands, it's a totally different story. I might as well do it right now. With uplands, you'll see a reduction in your stand count. You may lose 30% of your stand. And unless the grower's out there actually looking at the stand loss, he might, say, 3 weeks later, come back after vacation and say, well, yeah, the stand's a little light, but it's still a good stand. Well, we saw this over a 20-year period in California, and I can tell you that it affects uplands even more so, because it's really a hidden killer. In 1990 in California, we had up to, 1.3 million acres of Acala cotton. Right now, we have less than 50,000. Now, we came in with the Pimas, we were able to get resistance and came up to 200, 250,000 acres. But it's my belief that, amongst other problems, California lost a lot of their Acala acres because of Raise 4. And they got a reduced stand, and they said, well, you know, that's all right. That, you know, you can live with a reduced stand. But it's my firm belief that it impacted the plant as a whole. So at the end of the year, they were like, well, you know, we're not getting quite the yields we got. The fiber quality's down a little bit. We're not making as much money. Let's go and plant some pistachios or almonds. And there were other options in California. The one thing that we've tried to do is figure out exactly how to measure the disease. And ideally, if you're able to measure it in the field, that would be great. But I can tell you, until a year ago, we weren't confident with the testing of Raise 4 and the verification as to whether it was present or not present. Over 15 years, I can't tell you how many labs we sent our materials to where we simply got all sorts of results. There's no Raise 4. There's Raise 8. There's this and there's that. We decide we're going to use varieties and variety response as our calibration checks. We know this variety will die so much. This one up, so we'll do a whole 7-series calibration series to actually measure the effect of the disease in the field. The one thing that we found over the years is that some fields had a lot more spores than others. And as a measure I think that the industry needs to use, because it's been in all the tests, is to either use DP340 or 357 as the susceptible check. That way we're all on the same page. In a low spore count, 40 to 50 to 60% of the plants will survive. In our high spore count fields that we use, it's less than 5% stand. And for the most part, it's zero. Let me see. I think the one thing that we wanted to do was, under a high spore count, test everything that had previously been tested that showed promise for resistance. And so this year we put out the 9 Pima releases, germplasm releases, that did have a certain degree of resistance, but we felt it was under a low spore count regime. Under high spore counts, they simply did not respond well. PMS6, we've mentioned this before, it's a 40-year-old variety, and it's got essentially 4 distinct lines composited in it, and it simply doesn't respond well either under high spore counts. The MDs, some of the New Mexico material, although I'll kind of isolate those later, and the A2190 is a diploid. Now, on that one, it's a diploid. It's going to take a lot of work to get anything out of it. So we planted it out, and we had never tested it before, to tell you the truth, and this is the result. I think we basically had one bowl. So you're starting from a very, very low productivity. So our goal is basically to identify, you know, upland germplasm, whether it's in a variety or any source, to find that high level of resistance and provide to the industry. Okay. Next will be Mike that will kind of go into how we did it, why we did it, and explain in more detail the testing protocol.
All right, good afternoon. My name is Mike Alvey. I came on board with ONA Enterprises in 2006 when Fusarium really started hitting and spreading in California. For the first few years, our customers and the people that we helped were obviously seriously affected by this disease, and they were able to switch to other crops when they had fields or plants die. And but you know, as we head further east, there are less crops that that farmers are able to grow and make a profit on. So again, we have our stated goal. Based on our timeline earlier, we want to screen upland cottons. So this past year, we screened a diverse range of uplands from commercial varieties to germplasm lines. We did yield tests and screenings, some or most of which are under MTAs or other agreements. So I'm just going to stick with focusing on the process of how we do screening and more specifically, cite the screening we did with Cotton Incorporated. So Cotton Incorporated funded and we screened 1,000 upland lines, mostly conventional under very high Fusarium race 4 levels. We plan to advance the lines exhibiting very high resistance or immunity to Fusarium race 4 next year, where we will use our verification protocol. We hope to be able to give the industry, at least let them know the best upland varieties out there as soon as possible. During this screening and verification, we are evaluating three symptoms, plant death, vascular staining, and affected plant productivity. There are a number of factors we need to account for when looking at this. So we based a lot of our experience, what we know based on our Pima cotton screening, and we know that basically an initial screening of upland lines that have never been screened before will have a very high mortality rate. And we wanted to maximize the participation in this screening with the most amount of entries possible. And also, so with that, we also did a pretty low seed requirement to be tested. So we asked for 75 seeds per entry, which is about two bowls. Our consensus was if you don't have 75 seeds to spare, you don't have a variety. So for our testing purposes, we need pure varieties, not segregating populations, because segregating populations couldn't be verified in 2 years. And segregating populations would need to be handled on an individual plant basis. And our whole plan was to not take anything out of the field. So we were doing what we considered a closed system where the farmer would harvest whatever survives in that field at our test site and feed that cotton to his cattle that was across the dirt road. So nothing leaves the farm. And so I did say farm. That's another choice we had to make, was screening in a field or a greenhouse. I would say we'd lean toward field screening because we do a lot of field days and talk to a lot of growers. So any claims that we make about a variety had better do good on a grower's farm. And but obviously there are pros and cons to working in a field or a greenhouse. So the advantages to working in a field would be we'd be testing under farm conditions and evaluating how close each entry is to commercialization. If we had multiple resistant varieties, we'd work with the ones that are more productive. As far as letting plants go to full maturity, we observed about 10% of the total 5,000 entries we we tested this year visually had significant contamination or segregation, and we wouldn't have picked up on that if we had done this study in the greenhouse. There are a bunch of other external variables that we consider both positive and negative. An example would be other seedling diseases. So we do spot check the fields for other seedling diseases, but we're not doing that on a per plot basis. So, but as an example, if we find a line that's immune to race 4, but it's exceedingly susceptible to all other seedling diseases, there'd still be a lot of work that would be involved in getting that variety to a commercial level, which is our ultimate goal. So as far as the disadvantages of field testing, obviously, again, the multiple external variables we touched on, we could eliminate a variety that was killed by Rizoc, and maybe it wasn't killed by the race 4 disease, as an example. But we've decided to err on the side of exclusion rather than inclusion. Second risk would be losing the test due to weather, which is a real and even greater possibility in Texas than California. Another disadvantage in the screening in the field would be the uneven distribution of spores in the field. So this picture was from one of our screening sites. So if we're looking at the middle three rows, the middle row is an upland entry. The outer rows are both DP-357 Pima from that earlier picture. The plot on the right would have a higher spore count than the plot on the left, as evidenced by more surviving plants. So you can see here that there's a significant amount of difference in a very small area in the field. So while I did say that the distribution of spores are uneven in the field, the spores are not distributed randomly. They can be predictable if you know where the spores were last year, which way the water flows, and which way the cultivations are made. You can take an educated guess, at least, which way the spores will move or increase. But by having an uneven distribution of spores, we are increasing the variability in the field, and this is a real problem in both setting up the test and interpreting the results. If we increase the variability overall, then we have to compensate by either increasing the amount of replications per entry or increasing the amount of checks or both. So as we've stated earlier in the presentation, we are placing a constraint on the amount of entries for maximum participation. So we're going to increase the amount of checks that we have in the field. 55% of our screening is in our calibration series or check varieties that we use. So this is not our plot field plan, but this is just an example to show what 50% of the field in checks looks like. So you could say that the check varieties are in red and the entries are in white. But having a higher amount of checks does mean that you are, in fact, doubling your work. By doing this, we've just started to adjust for our first factor of variability, which would be the amount of variability in the field or the distribution of spores within that. So the second factor is a varietal response to a given disease. We take one particular variety and look at the ratio of surviving plants on the y-axis relative to the level of Fusarium race 4 on the x-axis. The more spores go into the plant, the more the plant's affected by the disease, essentially. This picture is an example of a population of one variety at each level of spore count. So this variety looks really good under low levels of race 4 with all the plants surviving on the left, but not so good under really high pressure as you move to the right under higher spore count. The other thing we also want to point out is the slope of the line. So the line does not have a slope of 1. In fact, we've observed multiple slopes within different varieties. So one question we had at our site visit was, well, why don't you just have the most susceptible variety be your check for the entire test? So the key part in that question was most susceptible varieties, implying that there are multiple susceptibilities or multiple levels of resistance, which is true and which we're showing here. So we use our check varieties to determine the disease levels within the field, and that's why we call them refer to them as a calibration series, because we're essentially mapping our field, hopefully on a per plot basis, to determine the RACE 4 levels. As an example, the most susceptible variety that we have probably would under a 10 to the 2 spore count. Is going to have most all the plants dead. So if we had a test that ranged from a spore count of 1 to, or 10 to the first, all the way to 10 to the fourth, this wouldn't be a very good check, because all the plants would be dead in the areas that had 10 to the third spore count and 10 to the fourth spore count. So we wouldn't effectively be able to map that area. So an example, you know, that'd be probably an example of the yellow line here. If you took that variety could probably really only be a check on a RACE 4 field that has anywhere from 10 to the third or 10 to the fourth spore count, just because if you got higher at 10 to the sixth, 10 to the seventh, you're not being able to differentiate the spore count. So the primary problem that we have left in the field testing is what to do with when we do have lower spore count areas within the field. So here's one of our plot plans of a screening that we did. This is not Cotton Incorporated. This is a different one. The check varieties are not shown here, but the yellow plots are entries that passed the plant survival part of the screening. So yellow's good. There's a distinct pattern here that we found in our checks, but also can just be seen here visually with the entries, in that the middle has less entries that survived, and it was actually a much hotter area of the field than the upper or lower part of this test. So I did use the phrase pass the screening. So in order to pass our screening, an entry must have virtually all the plants survive the first couple of months after emergence. It must have no or almost no vascular staining in the roots from the surface level or below. The entry must also show no other visual signs of distress through the season. So we had 11 entries from the Cotton Incorporated screening that exhibited no, meaning zero symptoms of the disease. So keep in mind that this is a mass screening, so we're not making any claims of resistance or immunity yet. We hope that a few of these entries will survive through next year's verification protocol that we'll go through. And I'd like to thank everyone that participated in these screenings and yield trials, including all the state and federal breeders, the five seed companies, Cotton Incorporated, and Texas A&M. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
Mike, I didn't understand kind of your last slide. How did you differentiate? I know you differentiated the high and low inoculant levels in that field. How did your selection criteria differ in those areas?
So are you referring to this picture?
Yeah.
Okay. So we didn't show the checks here. That's something we've had to manage is keeping our checks are proprietary versus. So, but I was just illustrating the point that these. So these, at least in the plant survival part of the screening, exhibited no or virtually no plant death for that particular Yes, 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 yep. So there's a different, yeah, we're saying that the there's a difference in inoculum, and it's being represented by the fact that there are more more plots that look good that might not otherwise be if the inoculum level was higher, such as the middle part of this.
Do you set up different selection criteria in those two areas?
Yep, yeah. And so if you're testing under the lower spore count, you'll only be able to really have confidence in the varieties that you throw out. So the ones that are still left could be good under higher spore counts, or they might falter.
And our calibration check basically told us this area was not as hot. So, and that's important to know, because you need to have a hot location, but also you need to map the location, because every field is going to be variable. So it's just a measure for us to say our confidence level is not as high in this area as it is in the middle section there.
I think your calibration cottons are phenomenal. I don't know that I've ever seen that degree of calibration of checks for any disease.
Well, we were basically forced to do that being plant breeders, because we know how our plants respond, but we just didn't have the detection technique that Dr. Nichols is going to develop for us.
We're told we're going to develop that.
Sounds good to me.
I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
So it was very interesting to me to see the curve of survivorship versus inoculum. And you and I have talked about this, matter of fact, we talked about this a bunch in Arizona the other day. There's a real problem with appearance of segregation in lines. So the observation I have is that for most of those calibration curves, where you look at the part where the curve is actually moving with respect to the X variable, they can look like they're segregated. Do you agree?
That isn't really the segregation we saw.
Yeah, so I guess I should have defined that. So segregation was where we saw distinct plant types within a given plot.
So that's my follow-up question. Okay, in the interpretation of the yield test, where you had the various upland lines, that you are inferring that they are off about 30%, did you see apparent segregation within those lines?
No. Those were close to commercial lines, so those were very pure.
When you looked at them in the field, we haven't done, Jason and I did this, we looked at that area and go, there's one, there's one, there's one. When you looked at those lines, did they look like they were stunted?
It depended on the line. There were a lot of differences between lines. And you know, as we focus in on, you know, there will be a lot more differences between the 1,000 that we screened this year for Cotton Incorporated versus the 11 that we're going to do in the verification. Those should be looking a lot better and have a lot less differentiation as far as the how the race 4 is affecting those plants. Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, I think my dad mentioned it, that we've only, you know, it's only been last year that we've actually had some labs that we had confidence in even confirming the actual existence of the disease. So that'll be something we look at going forward, but, you know, hasn't been a luxury we've had so far. Yep. They were pretty much asymptomatic. Now that's not to say that we need to go through the verification steps, but they looked very good this last year. Don?
Can you elaborate on what you do next year with
the blood? Yeah, so part of our verification protocol would be we would have so here we had one replication per entry. So the verification, we would have somewhere around 10 replications, and we would use a similar pattern of our calibration series. It'd basically just be a lot more intensive study with a lot more replications.
Okay, we can do more questions in our panel discussion. Thank you.